Views and opinions expressed on this show or any other show on Hronco Radio Network are not necessarily those reflective of Hronco Radio owners, affiliates, or local sponsors. Any hurt feelings or mixed emotions infringing upon the PC movement should be referred to Hronco's Human Services Department, which can be reached at blah, 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 to which time you will be told to shut it. On behalf of Hronco Radio Network,
I would like to take this time now to thank you from the bottom of our blackened souls. Thank you! Ha, 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 ha!
Ah, it is so good to see you again, sir. I see you have brought your friends with you this time. Very good, sir. Would you like your usual table? Right this way, then, sir. Please follow me.
Ah, who are we kidding? We're not that stuffy.
I knew I was being threatened. Do you think it's worth holding out? I mean, I heard some pretty ugly things about those guys. Ugly stories. Watch
out! Ladies and gentlemen, it's time for Politics Cafe, where we sit down and discuss anything and everything. No holds barred. Bring any topic to the table. We don't care. We'll discuss it. Come on in. Sit down. Take a load off. Now, host of the show, Mark.
There we are. Greetings, ladies and gentlemen, and fellow conversationalists around the world, and welcome once again to the Politics Cafe at www.hernco.com, the best in internet talk radio. The Politics Cafe is a small cafe located on an isolated stretch of the information superhighway, where we get together once a week and grill up some fresh topics for your digestion. And fresh topics we have aplenty tonight, folks. I don't know where to begin. It's nuts, I'll tell you. But the top story here, and I'm going to dig right into it without any further ado. This down off of Blacklisted News. Obama gets his private army. Yes, folks, now y'all heard me way back when, you know, back when he was campaigning, that he wanted to have a civilian police force that was just as well equipped and just as well funded as the armed forces. Now, at the time, everybody kind of poo-pooed it. Oh, he ain't going to get that. He ain't, you know, what the hell are we going to do with that? Blah, 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 blah. Well, at any rate, folks, it's come true. And it's actually been settled into part of this health care bill with the Patient Protection Affordable Care Act. On page 1312, section 5210, we have establishing a ready reserve corps. Section 203 of the Public Health Service Act, 42 U.S.C. 204, is amended to read as follows. And this is what you got to like, folks. This isn't just a part of this bill itself. This is where they actually take a chunk of this bill and will go back and amend other acts. Now, it says Section 203, the Commissioned Corps and Ready Reserve. A, the establishment. In general, here shall be in the service a commissioned regular corps and a ready reserve corps for service in time of national emergency. And a requirement, all commissioned officers shall be citizens of the United States and shall be appointed without regard to the civil service laws and compensated without regard to the Classification Act 2 of 1923 as amended. Now, this is important, folks. All right, civil service laws are things that you have to pass to become police officers as a rule. Well, maybe not so much a police officer, but here in my little town, way out in the hicks in the boonies, we have a police chief who was at the time the youngest member on the squad. I think we got, what, maybe 8-10 cops on our whole police force here. Yeah, it's a small town, folks. But the police chief, who was the youngest and most inexperienced member, was only there because he was the only one that could pass the civil service exam. That's been thrown right out the window. Now, appointment to this, commissioned officers of the Ready Reserve Corps shall be appointed by the president. So he doesn't have to go around anybody here. This is no judicial review, no Senate review, no House review. And commissioned officers of the regular corps shall be appointed by the president with the advice and consent of the Senate. Now, it's the Ready Reserve here. We've got to keep our eye on. Commissioned officers of the Ready Reserve Corps shall at all times be subject to call to active duty by the Surgeon General, including active duty for the purpose of training. Now, warrant officers may be appointed to the service for the purpose of providing security systems maintained by this service, and any warrant officer appointed to the service shall be considered for purposes of this act in Title 37, United States Code, to be a commissioned officer within the commissioned corps of the service. You gotta love this, folks. And it gets even better. Assimilating Reserve Corps officers into the regular corps, effective on the date of the enactment of the Affordable Health Choices Act, all individuals classified as officers of the Reserve Corps under this section, as such section existed on the day before the date of enactment of such act, and serving on active duty shall be deemed to be commissioned officers of the regular corps. Note here that those personally appointed by Barack Obama without advice and consent of the Senate automatically become a part of the regular corps, added by the editors here. Now, the purpose and use of the Ready Reserve. This is where it gets good. The purpose of the Ready Reserve Corps is to fulfill the need to have additional commissioned corps personnel available on short notice, similar to the Uniformed Services Reserve Program, to assist regular commissioned corps personnel to meet both routine public health and emergency response missions. The uses of this will be: the Ready Reserve Corps shall A. participate in routine training to meet the general and specific needs of the commissioned corps. To be available and ready for involuntary calls to active duty during national emergencies and public health crises, similar to the uniformed service reserve personnel. To be available for backfilling critical positions left vacant during deployment of active duty commissioned corps members, as well as for deployment to respond to public health emergencies, both foreign and domestic, and to be available for service assignment in isolated, hardship, and medically undeserved communities, to improve access to health services. For the purposes of carrying out the duties and responsibilities of the commissioned corps under this section, there are authorized to be appropriated such sums as may be necessary to the Office of Surgeon General for each fiscal years 2010 and through 2014. Funds appropriated under this subsection shall be used for recruitment and training of commissioned corps officers. Now, you just gotta love this, folks. Now, what I've just read to you from there is basically right straight out of the health care bill. It's there. It's basically got it. Now to read this on the surface of it, there could be a couple of things. One of these things here might even be an idea that I had and spoke about with our governor's office here years ago. And I kind of looking at it this way, the one part of this that let me see here. It's to be available to meet routine public health, okay, in undeserved areas. Now, of course, there's two different sentences that this is put or underserved. I should say undeserved, but or underserved is the right word here. But there you go. Here we go. And it's in section two, uses, and available for backfilling critical. All right, here we go. As well as for deployment to respond to public health emergencies, both foreign and domestic, and to be available for service, for service assignment in isolated, hardship, and medically underserved communities. Now, what that means is, okay, now you're in a poor community. You got to stop and think about something here. You're in the ghetto, okay? You're in you're in North Philadelphia. All right, or you are, in Harlem or some other place, no doctor wants to bother going in to set up an office. You need things there? Well, you're going to have an office there now. Except what you're going to have are ununiformed government personnel providing your health care for you. Now, that's basically what it's looking at here on the surface of this. But don't forget here, okay, the other thing you have here are national emergencies. The national emergencies is not qualified by anything other than national emergencies. Now, who gets to determine what a national emergency is? Well, of course, that's not in here. But who declares national emergencies now? Let's face it, who declares them now? It's the President of the United States. Okay, he has to declare a national emergency. You know, and don't forget, it's got to be a national emergency, you know, before he can get involved in it. He can't see a problem in any one state and say, well, I believe your state has an emergency, so we're going to declare a state of emergency. Well, no, that's not true. See, the governor has to do that. All right, you guys all remember what happened back in Katrina. All right, remember how, I can't remember the governor's name at this point in time, but, well, he's no longer the governor down there. You know, he refused to call it a statewide emergency before, you know, which is why FEMA took a couple of days before it could come rolling in there. You know, despite the fact that President Bush was calling him on the phone saying, hey, FEMA's ready. You know, you ready to go here? Well, we're not allowed to call in there. You know, there's this thing called posse comitatus. It doesn't allow you to run into states roughshod unless you're called for. You know, it's that simple. But here it is, folks, what he's doing here. And it's basically, it's so general. There's nothing here about how much money is going to have to be needed to fund for this, how big this corps is going to be, how many of these warrant officers are going to be on, how many commissioned officers. Doesn't say anything about how many regular personnel, what size, any of that. Nothing whatsoever. And all this is going to come in under the Surgeon General, which you just got to love. He just got to love this. So it's like, you know, hey, what we got to call the Surgeon General for a national emergency? Surgeon General will do what he's told. You can bet on that. You can bet on that with your bottom dollar, my friend. All right, even more lunacy going on out there tonight, folks. Next thing I got to get to now, listen to this. Tell me I'm not crazy here. But how many military commanders have you ever met that decided that they were going to stage an offensive? And gotta love it. Let's make sure we know everybody's about it. Let's give a war and make sure the invitations all go out early. Well, you gotta love it, because this was down by Ann Flaherty off the AP tonight. Which, by the way, all articles read on this program are for informational, educational, and discussion purposes only. The NATO forces in June will make a long-planned assault on the Taliban's spiritual home in the southern Afghan city of Kandahar, a senior military official said today. The goal is to rid the city of Taliban forces before the Muslim holy month of Ramadan begins in office in August, according to the official. U.S. officials have previously disclosed plans for a NATO-led offensive in the area this year, but have not said when it might happen. The two-month offensive will be a major test of President Barack Obama's new strategy in Afghanistan and a bellwether of the war in general. The official, who was not authorized to speak publicly on the operation, discussed the operation on condition of anonymity. Right, this is Robert Gibbs. I ain't kidding anybody here. Until the start of a major military operations, U.S. troops are working on securing transit routes and persuading the leaders of districts surrounding Kandahar to cooperate with NATO forces. Robert Gibbs? Now, Robert Gibbs is not a military official. He's the White House spokesman. Until the start of major military operations, U.S. troops are working on secure transit routes and persuading the leaders of districts surrounding Kandahar to cooperate with NATO forces. As the Taliban's growing capital prior to the U.S.-led invasion in 2001, Kandahar remains the spiritual heartland of the insurgency and a stubborn holdout in NATO's efforts to transfer control to Afghan President Hamid Karzai. In an effort to reverse gains made by the Taliban, Obama has ordered the deployment of 30,000 more troops to Afghanistan. Well, that was actually done months ago. Military officials say they expect several thousand of those troops to be sent to Kandahar at a security presence in the region. General Stanley McChrystal, the top U.S. and NATO commander in Afghanistan, said earlier this month that the operation in Kandahar will be different from Marja, where U.S. and Afghan forces stormed the farming town to purge Taliban forces. Unlike the Marja offensive, the Kandahar operation will be a rolling series of actions and won't open with a single major offensive like World War II's D-Day, McChrystal said. Well, of course not. Now if you've told everybody what's going to happen, where it's going to happen, and when it's going to happen, yeah, let's not make this like D-Day. You got to love it. This is insanity, you know. Let's make sure that everybody knows what we're going to do and where we're going to do it. Now, personally, I don't see the Taliban being smart enough to sit there and think they're going to fight this. I don't think they're going to be smart enough to start pulling people in from all over the country into one spot. It would be dumb of them. You know, I mean, let's face it. You might even go back and say, yeah, well, isn't that what Bush was thinking with Iraq? Yeah, you know, I got to admit that I made the argument for that years ago. You know, that when we went into Iraq, it would be far easier for us to have a presence overseas of our military fighting forces that any of the some Muslim extremists could attack. And at least, you know, hey, look, you know, it's one thing to attack American civilians. It's another thing to attack American fighting men. Another thing altogether. Which, by the way, talking about attacking civilians, I'm sure you folks all heard about the bombings in Moscow today. Two different female suicide bombers took out a total of 37 people on two different trains in Moscow today, and the Russians are up in arms. Putin is out there trying to telling everyone, he ain't trying, he's telling everyone that they will be destroyed. I am waiting to see what is going to be the backlash from this. And I've got to tell you this, folks, whatever the real backlash is that comes out of this, we're going to have to search the international news for it, because you are not going to see this here on our news. None whatsoever. It's, I'm amazed that these selves made it onto our news today. It was probably something that was so damn big in Europe that we just could not overlook it. But the fact of the matter is, I don't trust the news agencies in this country anymore, as far as I could throw any of them or throw their buildings to get accurate news on time of what the hell's happening. You know, it's got to be something just positively, absolutely overlook. You know, such as, you know, the little bit of coverage that it got today. And I mean, hey, Christ, the most coverage it got was on Fox News, and even that wasn't all that, you know, all that comprehensive, at least not the way I looked at it. But here you go. We even have more brilliance coming down from the administration here today. This off the McClatchy News sites by Robert S. Boyd. Three recent events, the foiled Christmas Day bombing of a Detroit-bound airliner, the December 30 assassination of seven CIA officers and contractors by a Jordanian double agent in Afghanistan, and the difficulties that U.S. Marines in Marja, Afghanistan have encountered, all have something in common: inadequate intelligence. To lower the odds of similar troubles in the future, the government has launched a swarm of spooky, out-of-the-box research projects known collectively as the Intelligence Advanced Research Projects Activity, or IARPA. The intelligence community needs to place bets on high-risk, high-payoff research that might not work, but if it did, would give us an overwhelming intelligence advantage over future adversaries, IARPA Director Lisa Porter said in an interview at her sparkling new headquarters just outside Washington in College Park, Maryland. You know, it's a little ways outside of Washington, there, College Park. Thank you very much. Hey, like, folks are going to have to talk a little bit about College Park now that they brought it up. Great town. It is a blast. It's where the University of Maryland sits. It's right on Route 1 going through Maryland. And you want to have a good time, that is a place to go. At any rate, where the hell was I here? We need to fundamentally change the way we do business. Yeah, well, duh. Why don't you go back and just undo what Clinton did? Porter's boss, Director of National Intelligence, Dennis Blair, said the IARPA's task was to be an intellectual ferment or primordial stew out of which great things will come. Sounds a little like Professor Pangloss there, doesn't he? He wants Porter's researchers to generate revolutionary capabilities that will surprise our adversaries and help us avoid being surprised. IARPA is modeled after the Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency, which has conducted far-out research for the Defense Department since 1958. DARPA's many innovations include the Internet, GPS, and robotic vehicles. Founded 2 years ago, IARPA has contracted with about 75 university research laboratories and 50 technology companies, large and small, to work on innovative solutions to future intelligence needs. More contracts are coming soon, Porter said. Some IARPA projects have a distinct science fiction feel. One program, Raynard, for example, has signed contracts with five research teams, mostly from major universities, to develop systems to observe avatars, animated computer images that take part in popular virtual world games such as Second Life and World of Warcraft. Such games have more than half a billion players around the globe, according to Raynard program manager Rita Bush. Players include many young Muslim men. The idea is to study how these avatars, like those in the hit movie Avatar, behave and communicate with one another for insights into how real-life people in hostile cultures think and act. IARPA officials think that analyzing avatars' behavior in a virtual world can produce useful insights into the nationalities, genders, approximate ages, occupations, education levels, even the ideologies of their creators in the real world. Players also use avatars to communicate with each other. One of the goals of this program will be to understand how terror groups might use such virtual worlds to communicate, said V.S. Subramanian, the director of the Institute for Advanced Computer Studies at the University of Maryland, who is connected with IARPA. This is a laudable goal. However, it is also a major challenge, he said in an email message. To identify how terrorists communicate in a virtual world requires the ability to first identify which conversations are in fact legitimate or normal and which ones are suspicious. This is hard to do. If it weren't hard, we wouldn't be doing it, Porter said. Failure is okay. We can learn from failure. Of course, they don't care. It's just money, right? Another IARPA project named Icarus will attempt to model the way human brains make sense of a bewildering mass of data. The Aladdin project is meant to pick out key items in the tsunami of video images that spy agencies collect. A program called Trust will try to help intelligence officers determine who can be trusted and who can't. You gotta love that one. Although IARPA resembles DARPA, there are other important differences. DARPA research is aimed at pressing military needs with a timeline of a year or so. IARPA is designed to help the intelligence community solve long-range problems. It probably will take 5 to 7 years before the CIA, the FBI, the National Security Agency, or other intelligence agencies benefit from IARPA's projects, Porter said. The Aladdin project is intended to help intelligence analysts cope with the thousands of video images that pour into their offices each day from unmanned aerial vehicles, on-the-ground surveillance, and other sources in danger zones. We get way too much video, Porter said. We have time to look at only a small portion of it. We want an automatic tool that looks like 100% of the videos and identifies things of interest. An Aladdin system could automate lower-level tasks, such as detecting tiny changes in images that a human might miss or take a lot of time to detect, she said. Machines are good at that. The Trust program differs radically from traditional lie detectors or polygraphs, which measure people's heart rates and perspiration to see whether they're lying. Instead, a Trust goal is to measure subconscious biological signals in one's own body. We generate signals in ourselves when we first meet people, Porter said. There's been a lot of research on this. Porter said a Trust program might have helped the CIA officers who a Jordanian double agent betrayed and killed in Afghanistan last year. Still another program called Knowledge Discovery and Dissemination might have helped detect Umar Farouk Abdulmutallab, the Nigerian bombing suspect who's alleged to have nearly caused the tragedy on Christmas Day in spite of a raft of clues which weren't put together in time. IARPA claims that the KDD projects could improve massive databases that don't mesh well with one another, allowing key connections to go undetected. In the Christmas bombing case, the dots simply a deputy director at the National Counterterrorism Center told the Senate Judiciary Committee last week at a hearing on the incident. The U.S. government needs to improve its overall ability to piece together partial fragmentary information from multiple collectors. Now, IARPA's Icarus program will exploit the latest research by neuroscientists on how the human brain operates. Recent advances in our understanding of brain function have laid the groundwork for an ambitious new effort to understand human sense-making, according to IARPA's description of Icarus. For example, Juyang Wang, a Michigan State University expert on how robots learn from experience, attended an Icarus information session in January and intends to submit a proposal to the IARPA. He told the group that he's already working to develop machines that demonstrate brain-like sense-making and reasoning. The subject of Icarus is very challenging but doable based on the latest breakthroughs, Wang said in an email message. The machine brain must be automatically developed so that it can accumulate experience from rich real-world experience. Similarly, computer giant IBM's Blue Brain project aims eventually to use supercomputers to replicate an entire brain. The project director, Henry Markham, told a computer technology conference last year in Long Beach, California. Computer scientists Robert Sloan and Georgi Turin of the University of Illinois at Chicago won a $500,000 grant from the National Science Foundation to develop methods to build common sense knowledge bases that they can evolve as they take in new information. Now, folks, it all sounds really good. As long as what's going to happen here is going to be kept on a worldwide basis. have this sort of, you know, how do I put this? The scary part about all this is one of those kind of things that could be used against you in a really bad way if you stop and think about it. Because, I mean, who are they going to get for research first? Who's going to be the easiest ones to look at? You're going to be out there, and you're going to be gathering all sorts of information on how humans interact with each other, especially in the World of Warcraft and other, you know, other video games out there, which lots of people play. My son's involved in one. My son does a lot of beta testing for it. Christ, I got another buddy of mine who was stuck in. I don't know if it's. World of Warcraft that he plays, or guarantee you right now, as we speak, but I think there's a lot more to say here before yours truly really, you know, I have started to look at it, I'll be honest with you. I've seen everything in the news out there today. But I ain't going to get into that one until next week. Yeah, it's a tough call. All right, folks, with that, we're at the bottom of the hour here. It's time to take a short break. We will be right back. Take a walk over to HearnCo.com. Take a look and see what's on sale over there. And buy something, will you? Hey, you're listening to the Politics Cafe, www.HearnCo.com, the best in Internet talk radio. We'll be right back.
Classmate receiving an attachment of you posing in your underwear. Your ex-boyfriend forwarding the picture to his friends. It being sent to your coach. And worst of all, your dad. All because of the time you posted those pictures on your profile. Anything you post online, anyone can see. So think before you post. For more information, visit www.cybertipline.com.
Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Justice, the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children, and the Ad Council.
Janine Marks, a 12-year-old, was fairly normal. She spent a lot of time online. One day, she met a new friend. The new friend had the same problems at home. They liked the same bands. They worried about the same subjects in school. They promised to keep each other's secrets. They wished they went to the same junior high. The new friend had good news. He said he was going to be in Janine's area one Saturday. He thought it would be amazing if they could just hang out, go to the mall. Janine agreed. The new friend didn't want parents messing this up. Janine showed up alone. So did her new friend, who wasn't in junior high, wasn't nice, and wasn't a 14-year-old boy. Every day, children are sexually solicited online. Help delete online predators. Call 1-800-THE-LOST or visit cybertipline.com to learn how to protect your kids' online life. A message from the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children and the Ad Council.
Have you ever dreamed of being a karate master? Well, stop dreaming and start chopping with the Karate Glove.
Hi, my name's Molly, inventor of the Karate Glove, and I have just 1.5 words for you. Hi-yah!
The Karate Glove chops through anything. Just put it on and instantly chop through wood. Hi-hi! Concrete. Hi-yah! Brick walls. Hi-yah! Trees. Hi-yah! Small cars. It can even chop through these 8 guitars. It chops things.
If I can invent a karate glove, just imagine what you can do. Visit inventnow.org to get started on your invention. Anything's possible. Keep thinking.
Brought to you by the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office, the National Inventors Hall of Fame Foundation, and the Ad Council.
It's hi-ya time!
And we're back. You're listening to the Politics Cafe at www.hernco.com. the best in internet talk radio. All right, folks, upwards and onwards into the news here tonight. A lot of talk out there going on about Israel gearing up for a possible attack on Iran. Iran coming out today and talking about, well, they're not really talking about it. Evidently, there's some evidence that has surfaced that they're building two more plants to, like the hexagon fluoride out of the uranium there, whatever the hell it is, that, what they're building is a centrifuge plants to help enrich uranium. But at any rate, nobody's sure about that. At any rate, though, okay, we're coming back on here. We're going to get back to that here in a minute. The stack of stuff here is just a little pile high. But now this is a good one down off the AP by Mary Claire Dale. Now, I don't understand it, but hey, we'll go over this real quick. Broadening wiretap laws to include videotaped surveillance could either safeguard privacy or thwart efforts to recover stolen property. A U.S. senator was told Monday at a hearing not far from a school that's being sued for trying to find missing laptops by activating their webcams. Now, Senator Arlen Specter, a Democrat from Pennsylvania, said at a field hearing of Senate subcommittee that he believes existing wiretap and video voyeurism statutes do not adequately address concerns in an era marked by the widespread use of cell phone, laptop, and surveillance cameras. Specter had said earlier that federal legislation might be needed to regulate the technology, and said later today that testimony at the Philadelphia hearing had convinced him. Among those testifying from a student who read into the record at the hearing was Blake Robbins, the Harrington High School student who sued the Lower Marion School District. My family and I recognize that in today's society, almost every place we go outside of our home, we are being photographed and recorded by traffic cameras, ATM cameras, and store surveillance cameras, Robbins wrote. This makes it all the more important that we vigilantly safeguard our homes, the only refuge we have from the eyes everywhere onslaught. Now, Robbins accuses the district of spying by secretly activating webcams on the school-issued laptops. Officials admit they did so, but said they were trying only to locate 42 lost or stolen computers. Now, neither Robbins nor his parents attended the session, which did not specifically focus on the Lower Marion case, the subject of ongoing county and FBI investigations. Instead, five experts debated how best to strike a balance between privacy and security concerns. Lawyer Kevin Bankston of the Electronic Frontier Foundation argued that wiretap laws, which now cover audio recordings, should be broadened to include videotape surveillance. But others disagreed, arguing that wiretap charges should not apply, lest they entangle innocent people using software tracking programs to try to find their own stolen phones or laptops. If it does fall under the Wiretap Act in the new legislation, we hope there will be an exception for stolen devices, said John Livingston, chairman of Absolute Software Corporation, the Vancouver, British Columbia-based company that acquired LandRev Theft Track software program deployed by Lower Marion. The panel debated whether any new law should focus on the intent of the person using the camera, whether the subject's locations afforded them an expectation of privacy, such as a home or a locker room, or the full context of the situation. Now, only one person from the Lower Marion District testified, a parent opposed to the Robbins family's lawsuit, who urged a middle ground between security and privacy concerns. Now, Bob Wegbrink said that a warning might suffice to let families know the district might activate webcams without a student's knowledge. Students could then choose to keep the computers in other parts of the house instead of their bedroom, said Wegbrink, whose group fears the lawsuit will damage the upscale district's finances and reputation. Federal legislation might help clarify what school districts, employers, or others can and cannot do, he said. There's no question that I believe the federal government should be legislating in this area, said Fred H. Cate, an Indiana law school professor who specializes in cybersecurity issues. We've seen a proliferation of video cameras in every aspect of our lives. Specter, the only senator in attendance Monday, agreed to lead the effort, noting that at least one federal judge voiced concerns a quarter century ago that privacy laws were not keeping up with emerging technology. My sense is my colleagues will be responsive, Specter said. If there is a gap, it ought to be closed after 25 years. Now, it's awful funny. that you got a Democrat in there trying to tell us that he's going to help you guarantee your privacy. I'm sorry, there's just something backwards going on here. And once again, it's one of them kind of things to look at. I think personally, and folks, I will be keeping my eye on what legislation comes out of this, but this legislation that's going to be on this is going to be a vehicle for something else that you have no idea what it is. You know, hey, look at the health care bill. It's got Obama's private army in it. Were you expecting that? Hell no. Of course not. But there you have it, right? What's there? Well, you found it. All right. Now, let's see here. We got a bunch of other stuff in it. Okay. Oh, yeah. Oh, you guys all heard about this last week, I'm sure. Now, the insurance industry says it won't fight President Barack Obama over fixing a coverage gap for kids in the new health care law. Of course they won't. In a letter Monday to Health and Human Services Secretary Kathleen Sebelius, the industry's top lobbyist says insurers will accept new regulations to dispel uncertainty over a much public medical conditions can get coverage starting this year. President of America's health insurance plan said the industry will fully comply with the regulations expected within weeks. The laws were signed last week, but the fine print was not clear on whether kids with health problems were guaranteed coverage starting this year or if they might have to wait until 2014. Breaking news on top of that, President Barack Obama's top health care officials put insurers on notice today that the new health law overhaul law requires them to cover kids with medical problems, trying to dispel uncertainty over a much publicized benefit. It remains unclear if the sternly worded letter from Health and Human Services Secretary Kathleen Sebelius would settle a dispute over a widely touted achievement of the health care law that Obama signed last week. The fine print of the law appears to have been less than completely clear on whether kids with health problems are guaranteed coverage starting this year. If there's a problem, some parents and their children may have to wait a long time. The legislation's broad ban on denying coverage to any person on account of health condition doesn't take effect until 2014. The sticking point is that the immediate benefit for children may not be as sweeping as Obama had claimed in extolling the legislation. That's because the law can also be read to mean that if an insurance company accepts a particular child, it cannot write a policy for a child that excludes coverage for a given condition. For example, if the child has asthma, the insurer cannot exclude inhalers and respiratory care from coverage, as sometimes happens now. Right. But the company could still turn down the child altogether. The industry seems to be saying, you didn't write it the way you meant it. The government is saying, yes, we did. The health policy consultant Robert Lacheski, a former insurance executive, now we need to see what the industry does. Is the industry going to fight this? It would create some real public relations problems. In a letter to the main industry trade group, Sebelius attempted to remove any doubt. Health insurance reform is designed to prevent any child from being denied coverage because he or she has a pre-existing condition, she wrote America's Health Insurance Plans. Now it is time to search for non-existent loopholes that preserve a broken system. All right. Why would you want to preserve a broken system? Would you want to fix a broken system? Sebelius specified that children with pre-existing medical problems may not be denied access to their parents' coverage under the new law. Furthermore, insurers will not be able to insure a child but exclude treatment for a particular medical problem. The term pre-existing conditions exclusion applies to both the child's access to a plan and his or her benefits once he or she is in the plan, Sebelius wrote, adding that the department will shortly issue a regulation to that effect. The new protections will begin starting in September, she said. There was no immediate public response from the industry group. All right, this goes on and on here, folks, but look, what did I talk about last week? And, did I talk about this at any rate? Yes, I'm sure I did, but let's recap this real quick. Everybody's saying that next fall, we're going to have the ejection election. All right, the big ejection election that's coming this fall where the Democrats are going to get tossed out on their ass, you know, because of all of the adverse actions to this health care bill. What's happening right here, folks, is part of what I was telling you last week is going to happen, and it's why these Democrats are going to get reelected. All right, they're going to begin to cover these children immediately. All right, what did I tell you last week? That immediately you're going to start to see a lot of people getting coverage. You're going to see a lot of people getting offered a road into the health insurance exchange. All right, you are going to see some of these companies here jumping through hoops, more than willing to lose all the money that's necessary in order for them to do this. You know, I was hearing something very interesting over the weekend here that, you know, insurance companies are required to keep 45% of what they do in reserve in case of catastrophic claim calling. They're allowed to spend 15% on administrative costs. And the balance of it has to go to whatever it is they're paying out already on an average basis each year. Now, insurance companies are going to lose that coming down the road here, or at least they're going to be allowed to go beyond those limits. They're only going to be required to keep 15% in coverage or in reserve here. Now, not reserve, a good chunk of the reserve is why payments are as high as they are. Okay. Don't forget, look, they got to pay, and I'm trying to think here, it's 35%, whatever the math worked out to be, that they're paying out all the time and, you know, for claims on a daily basis, all right, which is what they realize. But it's 45% that they have to keep in reserve. I could be wrong here. It might be as high as 60%. At any rate, that reserve is going to be allowed to go down to 15%. All right, and folks, the whole reason that that reserve is being allowed to go down there is to let the health care costs come down a little bit. All right, and that's what's going to happen. I'm here to tell you folks that by the time September rolls around this year, you are going to see Democrats jumping up and down and telling all their buddies, all the liberals out there are going to be going crazy saying, hey, you got to get down here, man. That place has just opened up. I just got health care for nothing, man. I just got free health insurance. Yeah, I've been working under the table. What the hell, man? You don't have to tell them that. Just tell them you're unemployed. And bang, off you go. You've got your health insurance, and they are going to gain themselves millions of votes before the September's election rolls around here. Now, look, they're going to continue to do this to get themselves thoroughly and firmly entrenched. You're going to see more and more attacks on the right wing out here, attacks on Republicans, and you're going to continue to see them, even though the Republicans are, let's face it, they're basically lame. There isn't a damn thing they can do about anything, despite how much jumping up and down they can do. They do not have either House of Congress or the White House. So they're basically, they're impotent. They're mute, okay? They're limp. There isn't a damn thing that they can do. But what you were going to see happen between now and then, and I'm telling you, there are some big-ass insurance companies out there that are lining up to get in on this program. And as far as them taking a loss this year, they do not care. They will not care how much of a loss or how deep of a loss they have to get into in order to get everyone signed up and in obeying the law. All right, it's already written into the law that they will get themselves reimbursed for whatever losses they're going to have down the road. Now, I also heard something interesting the other day from someone else who claimed it, you know, what they're going to do here is get this thing, get it all set up, get it running, allow the insurance companies out there, the ones that will be still standing, the qualified health benefit providers, to set up the national system. Now, this is going to be a tricky affair, and it's going to take a large investment, okay? You're talking about a huge network that has to be built up here between this health insurance exchange, between the medical records division, which is going to be another hairy thing here, the electronic record keeping, and, of course, the logistics of everything, you know, getting all the doctors signed on to it, everything else that you got to do here, you know, getting which coverages are going to happen where. How it's going to happen, it's going to be an HMO kind of thing. You know, let's face it, down the road here, you know, you're going to go to your doctor, and, you know, and your doctor's his recommendations are all going to have to be run through insurance companies before those recommendations can take effect. You know, a doctor might say, well, man, look, I want a second test on this thing. And the insurance company will say, yeah, well, you can have a second test, but you can't go to that guy. You got to go over to this guy over here. Or, you know, well, we don't think that second test is necessary or what have you. At any rate, you know, let's face it, everything that a doctor is going to prescribe for you or believe that has to be done is going to have to be run through the insurance company first before that can happen. And they've got to get that system together first, okay? And they're going to allow those insurance companies to do it. And this friend of mine that I was talking to saying, look, you know what's going to happen here? Is what the government is doing is just saving themselves the expense of getting that system set up. Because once they've got that system all set up and in plan, once they've got the monopoly fully set up, then they're going to turn around and attack the monopoly for what it is. All right, now you stop and think about this. If you want the single-payer health care, if you want government health care, if you want to do this, this is the best way to start, just exactly the way they're starting. It's insane. You know, it's purely insane. And they're Yeah, I'll tell you what, they're heading right down that road, folks. Let's make no mistake about that. You know, they will get these guys, these insurance companies, all set up here. Now, of course, they're going to throw them a bone, you know, once the system is set up and they decided, well, okay, fellas, you guys have a monopoly on this, and we can't allow a monopoly to exist, and when they go in to take all them over, it's not going to be as much of a takeover as it will be an absorption. You know, what they will do is just absorb all this right into the government. All these people that were getting a paycheck from an insurance company before will now get the paycheck directly from the federal government. You know, instead of the federal government paying the insurance company and then the insurance company paying you, well, you're going to get your paycheck right from the federal government. We'll just cut that insurance company right out of the way. Things won't really change, but it'll look good for the potential voters going down the road. Another way to get Democrats elected once again. Won't it be a wonderful thing? And then how is our health care going to work at that point in time? I don't know, folks. I'll tell you what. The book is still waiting to be written on that one. There's no doubt about it. But insanity does reign supreme. They are doing and dealing and doing some damnable, underhanded stuff. Personally, I would like to see, and I think if any of them out there have got the guts to do it, the smart move here would be to see if there are any Republicans on the House Finance Committee or any Republicans that are somewhere near whoever it is that writes the checks. Because I don't think you're going to see a lot of money spent immediately. They're going to do all they can to sign people up. I think the insurance companies are going to be more than willing to cut losses. But at some point in time, the federal government will be writing checks to insurance companies to start covering these losses. They're going to have to do it, or the insurance companies aren't going to be able to stay alive. And I think that at that point in time, that's when the Republicans or the right or the independents or anybody but the damned left has to be watching. Has got to have an eye on this. You've got to have some watchdogs in there that are going to do this. It's a sad situation, folks, but we are coming down to it. All right. Yeah, hey, remember I was telling you about how they, they're talking craziness, doing all they can to rip up Republicans. If the Republican National Committee is investigating how and why it spent nearly $2,000 for meals at a bondage-themed strip club in West Hollywood. Yeah, featuring topless dancers simulating lesbian sex. Man, you gotta love it, folks. They are ripping this up every which way. Republicans are taking a beating out there like they have never had before. You know, they're taking a beating like they owe them money. It's not a pretty thing that we've got here. I could get into the subway bombings, but I think that's already been covered way too much. We got to this, we got to that one, we got to the other one. There was one more that I know I wanted to talk about here, and I will dig through the stuff. What's always cooking in the meantime? Well, the weather's cooking. Let's face it, it's been cold and damp the last few days here, but global warming will be coming in very hard this weekend. People in the Northeast here should be looking at 75-degree temperatures this weekend, and man, I cannot wait. Actually, been out. Hey, you know, I got a shot here while I'm digging through the pack. It's every now and then you got to give a plug out there to something that's really doing a good job for you. A product that you have found that is just doing dynamite. Now, this is not a product that I would have gone out there and purchased. It's a beautiful thing. Has done and has really helped out the old man in a bad way. Beaming system. And folks, don't knock it. You see people sitting in their living rooms, and yeah, you're going to hear about people throwing the Wii through the front of the television set. Hear about people having heart attacks and strokes and everything else playing with the damn thing. The Wii Tennis will do that to you. But the Wii Golfing, it's unbelievable, folks. I've never seen anything like it in my life. I got to admit that it's been completely insane to go out on a golf course after playing the Wii on a daily basis and then see exactly how it goes through. My putting has dropped. I'm a guy that generally will 3-putt on every hole, but I have not been over 2 putts on a hole here all season. And I've been out twice now. It's a short season so far. But, Christ, last weekend I had 2 birdies in the front nine. I mean, how do you beat that? And, folks, so I got to give a plug out there to whoever it was that built Wii and whoever it was that programmed it for the golf game. You have done one hell of a job. All right, what do we got going on here? What do we got here? Oh, here we go. Now, this is dandy. You remember the bailout? Remember Citigroup, big bailout they got? Well, the U.S. Treasury Department said today that it would sell its multi-billion-dollar stake in Citigroup this year in what will be one of the largest stock sales in history. The department said it intends to fully dispose of its roughly 7.7 billion shares in Citigroup over the course of 2010, subject to market conditions. The U.S. government owns 27% of the firm, and shares worth around $32 billion at Monday's market rates. Now, the announcement came as Washington tries to claw back to the $700 billion of taxpayers' money used to prevent the collapse of the global financial system in 2008. At the depth of the crisis, the government injected a total of $45 billion into Citibank, once the world's largest banking group. New York-based company faced massive losses in the wake of the mortgage crisis and came perilously close to seeing a run on its deposits, as its confidence in the system collapsed. Despite repaying some $20 billion to the authorities in December, Citi is still one of the last of the major banks operating under the shadow of a U.S. government bailout. This is the next stage of us moving to make sure we are getting out of the financial system as quickly as we can, Treasury Secretary Timothy Geithner told CNBC today. We don't want to be in the business of owning a share in a private company any day longer than necessary. The government had held off its share, selling its share in a stake in the firm until now, no doubt dissuaded by its low market value. The beleaguered global bank's full-year loss in 2009 was $1.6 billion, although that was much lower than the hefty $27.6 billion loss suffered in 2008. But Citi's share price has been rising steadily in recent months as chief executive Vikram Pandit has embarked on sweeping reforms designed to prop up the firm's balance sheet slash costs. Pandit efforts to reduce the company size and staff, refocus business strategy, and overhaul risk management has cut costs by over $13 billion annually. The government now stands to net an $8 billion profit from selling its shares, if current prices hold up. But amid continued market jitters, the Treasury said its sell-off would be gradual. A quick unloading of the stock could flood the market, diluting the value of the firm. Well, duh. Treasury intends to sell its Citigroup common shares into the market through various means in an orderly and measured fashion, the Treasury Secretary said. But analysts said the large volume of Citi stocks bought and sold each day should help the government offload its stake. While average daily trading of more than 500 million shares, we think the government could divest its stake without undue pressure on the share price, said Standard & Poor's Matthew Albrecht. But the news prompted shares in the banking and the giant to sink. It's exactly what I was just sitting here thinking. Citi's share price was down 3% to $4.18 a share at the close of trading today. The Treasury also owns billions of dollars worth of Citi trust preferred securities and warrants. Financialist instruments allowing holders to buy stock in the future at a fixed price. Folks, look for Citibank's stock to drop at least a quarter when the bell opens tomorrow morning. This is unbelievable. These guys go out there and announce it. And let me tell you something, folks. This is not a funny thing. I'm laughing at it here. But if you ever wanted to know how the government manipulates the financial markets to its benefit or to punish people, this is how it does it. All right? Make no mistake about it, okay? Okay, what they do is they go out there and they make announcements in the press. All right, they can go out there and say that company XYZ is under investigation for improprieties in its accounting, or it's under investigation for having a faulty product, or it's under investigation for none of this has to be true. All it's got to do is be under investigation, and you will watch that stock stuff drop like a hell, like a bandit. Conversely, they can go out there and say, company XYZ seems to be performing better than average, seems to be coming out with new products that are going to revolutionize everyone's lifestyle. They can run stuff right up and down, because don't forget you got the state-controlled media out there that is their lapdog, that will do whatever they tell them. And that's exactly what's going on here, folks. All right, now, Treasury's trying to tell you that they're going to sell this stuff off here. What Treasury is doing is telling Citibank to get on a ball and come buy it back. That's what they're trying to do. But at any rate, who knows? There could be something else going behind this that you have no idea about. None whatsoever. Citibank might be making a move on something over at, Goldman Sachs, for all you know. You know, and here you have it, you know. And well, we just turn around, let's go tell Keitner to do this or that, and that'll straighten everything right out. That'll run Citibank right down there, and they ain't going to be able to make that move. What have you, baby. You know, there could be all kinds of stuff going on out there. So when you see pieces of news like this hit, you know, you always got to take it with a grain of salt. You always got to look, maybe there could be something going on behind here that you're not going to be able to find out about. At any rate, I'll tell you something. If you're smart, first thing you're going to be doing in the morning is shorting Citibank shares. All right. But, of course, to get there, you're going to have to get some sleep tonight, just as I will, too. And, folks, we have hit that time once again. It is top of the hour here. The Maitre D' is busy finishing up all of his funny little good things that he does. And this guy, he's really created a hell of a job for himself, you know. I don't know if he's really created as much of a job for himself as he's been taking over my job. But you know what? I don't mind, because he doesn't charge me any more money. Hope he hasn't got nothing funny up his sleeve. You know, you don't want to think that the guy's just glad to be here and glad to have a job in this economy that is, you know, just taking a dip on a daily basis here. But nonetheless, the tables were all getting piled high up on top of the, high with the chairs. The lights are starting to grow dim. I put out the big old cafe sign out front, but as always, the bar will be open. So, folks, belly up to the bar, have a fine old time, and I want to say thank you very much for coming once again. Folks, you have listened to the Politics Cafe at www.hernco.com, the best in internet talk radio. Thanks a lot for coming, folks. We'll see you all next week.